Hey, welcome to Breitbart News Daily. Thanks for being here. We're going to play for you. Wow, the first hour was good, but let's do the first segment of the second hour, where we talked about this KGB defector who you've heard before, Yuri Bezmenov. Just demoralization. This intentional effort to demoralize us, and how we need to fight against that. And we had some great phone calls after, which have inspired us for what we're going to do on Monday. We'll talk about that on Monday. But here's that opening segment. Trump, he said, I think we're in massive trouble as a country. We have a little more than seven. Oh, this is Donald Trump, who was interviewed by Matt Boyle and Alex Marlowe for 90 minutes the other day. So there's going to be a couple days now of stories about that interview that they did with Donald Trump. Trump said, I think we're in massive trouble as a country. We have a little more than 7 months until the election. That sounds like a short time, but that's an eternity for this lunatic to be running this country. If we don't win, I think that November 5th is the most important day in the history of our country. 90-minute interview that he did with Breitbart. All right, I got to play this clip here. Again, this TikTok stuff. I know you're rolling, oh, another TikTok. None of this was ever about TikTok. TikTok, by the way, is just a taste of what is to come technology-wise. It's about much more than that. This is, I'm sure you've heard this guy before. I know you have. This is Yuri Bezmenov, KGB defector in 1984. And here he is talking about the process that the KGB, the Soviet Union, has used and is using now to destroy our country from within. And we'll play these clips here, and you can decide how effective you think they've been at this.
Ideological subversion is the slow process, which we call either ideological subversion or active measures.
Sorry, ideological subversion. Like, that is so obviously what's been taking place here. It's amazing.
Активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process which goes very slow, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of your enemy, exposed to the ideology of the enemy. In other words, Marxism-Leninism ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism.
Yep.
The demoralization process in the United States is basically completed already. For the last 25 years, actually it's overfulfilled, because demoralization now reaches such areas where previously not even Comrade Andropov and all his experts would even dream of such a tremendous success. Most of it is done by Americans to Americans, thanks to lack of moral standards. As I mentioned before, exposure to true information does not matter anymore. A person who was demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him. Even if I shower him with information, with authentic proof, with documents, with pictures, even if I take him by force to the Soviet Union and show him concentration camp, he will refuse to believe it until he is going to receive a kick in his fat bottom. When a military boot crashes his balls, then he will understand, but not before that. That's the tragic of the situation of demoralization.
Jeez. They demoralize us to the point where we don't even want to defend our country. We talked in the last hour about a couple different things, but how people don't have opinions anymore, how we've always defined opinions. People don't have opinions, they have feelings. We have feelings about things. We're talking about Robert E. Lee. And people, everyone has an opinion. Everyone has a, they think they have an opinion on Robert E. Lee, but it's not a, an opinion how we've always defined an opinion. Opinion has always been like a concerted effort to learn about a thing so that you can take a stance on a subject that you have some awareness of and you've done some research so that you, right, like you have an opinion based off of something. We don't have opinions, we have feelings. 99% of people just have a feeling about Robert E. Lee. And that's true with everything, too. They don't have opinions. Listen, the Chinese are the same as the Soviets were here. They think long term. And the goal isn't just to spy. It's ideological warfare. Do you know, I don't want to keep mentioning TikTok because this isn't about TikTok. But TikTok sent out a push notification to 170 million Americans saying contact your Congress about this bill. Right? Like that alone is a power that no dictator in history ever could have imagined having. So it's ideological subversion is what's taking place. So that's phase one. Phase one is demoralization. Once a society is demoralized, its weakness and unwillingness to defend itself is exploited to undermine the military. Goodness, we spent the last hour really talking about West Point yesterday, and we brought it up again today, about undermining the military. I could see a day where there is no more West Point. They're like, we just got to get rid of this thing. It's too misogynistic. Too many men. Lots of toxic masculinity. It's better that we just get rid of it. So we're unwilling to defend ourselves. Undermining the military, economy, foreign affairs. The next phase is crisis and normalization. Phase four is when the Marxists truly come to power. And here is the last clip of this Soviet defector.
Your leftists in United States, all these professors and all these beautiful civil rights defenders, they are instrumental in the process of the subversion only to destabilize the nation. When their job is completed, they are not needed anymore. They know too much. Some of them, when they get disillusioned, when they see that Marxist-Leninists has come to power, obviously they get offended. They think that they will come to power. That will never happen, of course. They will be lined up against the wall and shot.
They think they'll come to power. No. Just a bunch of useful idiots in the process. The real Marxists will take over. This is all human nature. We have the reality of human nature plus unheard of technological power, unheard of in all of human history. You put that concoction together and buckle up. Or as we concluded yesterday, get grounded in truth as if your life depends on it. Maybe in the past, it was better to be grounded in truth just because maybe life would work out for you a little better one way or the other. Now you must be grounded in truth as if your life depends on it. Because there's ideological subversion everywhere. And it's the littlest of things. And it's all couched, mostly it's couched with compassion, but there's lots of other ways to couch it. Breitbart had a story the other day of a transgender golfer, Haley Davidson, who's a man, who won a woman's tournament, one step closer to the LPGA qualifier. There's a lawsuit right now. The 12 women put forth, they're suing the NCAA about Leah Thomas, the swimmer, remember, who won the 500 freestyle at the national championships. So this is working its way through lawsuits now as well, but it's still happening in the meantime. This guy's real name is James. Last competed as a man in 2015, cut off some body parts, and is now crushing the women. So this, I bring that up only because the most obvious lie is that a man can become a woman. And that is ideological subversion. And there's a ton of useful idiots along here who go along with it, who think they're so progressive and wonderful, but that is ideological subversion. If you could inject into an enemy the idea that you talked about lack of morality, the idea that men can become women, you are so in control of everything. And this is why these people, they keep forcing you to admit that that's possible, which is why you can't give an inch on that. There's a quote, a sort of well-known quote on the internet. It's one of those internet quotes that like no one knows who said it. Well, we do know who said it, but like it'll be quoted. You'll read it. It'll be like Mark Twain or Ben Franklin or Abraham Lincoln. It's like, I don't know, whatever. Someone said it. It was Voltaire. But he said, whoever can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. Heard that before? Whoever can make you believe absurdities can make you believe atrocities. Well, let me look it up here. I want to give you the beginning and after of it. It's actually better than just that line. Here we go. This is Voltaire. Formerly, there were those who said, you believe things that are incomprehensible, inconsistent, impossible, because we've commanded you to believe them. Go then and do what is unjust because we command it. Right? So they would force you to say ridiculous things. Such people show admirable reasoning. Truly, whoever can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. If the God-given understanding of your mind does not resist a demand to believe what is impossible, like a man becoming a woman, do you see the stakes here? Do you see what we're talking about? Like how impossible that is? If the God-given understanding of your mind does not resist, this is 250 years ago. If the God-given understanding of your mind does not resist a demand to believe what is impossible, then you will not resist a demand to do wrong to that God-given sense of justice in your heart. As soon as one faculty of your soul has been dominated, other faculties will follow as well. It's Voltaire in 1765. Oh, Slater, here you go, talking about the soul again. You're always talking about the soul. You talk too much about the soul. Au contraire, good sir. We don't talk about it enough. We don't talk about the soul enough. Sorry if my maybe once a day, maybe. Maybe once a day mention of the soul is too much for you to bear. Because I know the whole rest of your day, everywhere you turn, everyone's always talking about the soul, right? So heaven forbid you have to listen to that word once a day in the morning. You're so oversaturated with talk about the soul. But it's all any of the great philosophers cared about. Philosophy literally means the study of the soul. And we never talk about it today. It's why everyone's miserable. And here's Voltaire in the mid-1700s talking about the soul and the God-given sense of justice that's written on your heart. And how when you start to erode that, then they'll force you to do anything. They'll force you to do anything. My point of this is the people who want you to commit atrocities, the first order of business, the people who want to numb your soul, the first order of business is to get you to say things that aren't true. I don't know what comes first. I don't know what comes first. The numbness of the brain or the numbness of the soul. I don't know which is first. I don't know if it's a chicken or egg. I don't know if it even matters, but the soul is the one I'm concerned about. The first order of business is to get you to say things that aren't true. And once you start saying things that aren't true, you become weak and soft. That's what he said. That's what Yuri said there. That's what the KGB defectors say. It's the soft brains of generations of children. And once you become soft, you're able to do immoral and unjust things because you've seared your conscience dead. Don't say that a man can become a woman. But it's not just that. It's, I'm not just focusing on that. It's just like the most blatant, obvious example. Don't say that a fish can become a monkey and a monkey can become a person. But we'll save that one for another day. Just don't say things that aren't true. Don't let them manipulate you like that. They're making you weak. By the way, every once in a while I get an email from someone saying, Slater, whatever happened to that woman who called in who was going to work and was like being forced to call a coworker, a woman or man. I forget which way it went. And I'll get an email every once in a while. I'll be like, whatever. I don't know. We never got a call back. I never got an email. So if you're that woman, you know who I'm talking, you know, right? This is like, I was like, when do you think it was, guys? It was like a long time. It was like 5 months ago or something. So something's had to have happened since then. So if that's you, I want to feel free to give a call, of course, 866-95-PATRIOT. We'd love to know the update. Literally, I get an email, once every 10 days, I probably get an email. I'm like, whatever happened to that one? P.S., whatever happened to that woman who called? making you numb to get you to commit atrocities, but also making you numb so you sit back while the atrocities take place. Right? And they could be little things like, oh, we're just going to change the motto of West Point. And we hear that, and we're like, nah, who cares? Whatever. It doesn't really matter. And then you get stuff like this, right? So eventually things like this happen. And you're like, this can only happen if you're numb. This is local news in Canada.
There's also updated advice for all vehicle owners, a message echoed by Toronto police speaking at an Etobicoke safety meeting last month. Constable Marco Ricciardi had a new message for vehicle owners who keep their fobs in Faraday pouches.
To prevent the possibility of being attacked in your home, leave your fobs at your front door. Because they're breaking into your home to steal your car. They don't want anything else. A lot of them that they're arresting have guns on them, and they're not toy guns, they're real guns. They're loaded.
That's why...
What? That's Toronto. That's the Toronto police chief is saying, hey, everyone, just leave the keys in the car. Okay. Just leave the keys in the car because... Now, listen, before I continue on, I hope that you are so offended by that argument, by that suggestion from the police chief. That should be so offensive. I know that's a term that's overused, offend. I'm so offended. You should be offended at your core at that suggestion, that there are criminals who are stealing cars. Okay, a criminal wants to come and steal your car, and they'll go into your house to steal your car keys. So the suggestion from the police chief was just leave the keys in the car. You have to be so neutered to be okay with that. I don't know what other word to say. Like, I'm just thinking of... So I'm thinking too. First, I'm imagining everyone in Texas. Like, I'm imagining a sheriff in Texas suggesting that people in Texas be like, what are you out of your mind? Like, but like, that's that spirit that everyone should have. It's like, no, that is not okay. That is not the solution to this problem here. And then I'm also a little distracted because I'm thinking of if we played that clip to everyone who listens to every different station on SiriusXM Patriot. So you listen to, you play that for the people. Let's pull up the stations here. You play that for the people who listen to Hits 1. And then you play that clip for the people who listen to Pitbull's Globalization. And then you play that for the people who listen to 90s on 9. And then the sports stations, and then the comedy stations, and then Progressive and Patriot. I have to imagine it's the people who listen to Patriot who would be most offended. It's got to be, right? Who are most offended. But most people on all the other stations would be like, that seems sensible, yeah. That seems good. That's wise. I don't want to get attacked. So I should just, if you're listening to Andy Cohen, you're probably like, yeah, that sounds right. But it's not just crazy Canada. Here's Pittsburgh.
Susan, residents of the city will see a major change in the way police respond. They will no longer respond to calls that aren't considered in progress emergency. That means calls like criminal mischief, theft, harassment, and most burglary alarms will all be handled by an enhanced telephone reporting unit. That means residents will file a police report over the phone. Officers will not respond unless it's an emergency. Also, between the hours of 3 a.m. and 7 a.m., there will be no officers at any of the 6 stations throughout the city.
What?
Call boxes that link directly to 911 have been installed for people to use in case of an emergency. And during the overnight shift, there will be as few as 20 officers to cover the entire city.
Okay, so it's 3 a.m. You go to the police station. There's no one there. It's locked, and there's a call box outside. So you call 911. You say, hey, I need a police officer. And like, oh, sorry, there's only 20 for the entire city. And we're like, yeah, sure. That's fine. No problem. And, press the wrong button. Is that you? And did I press the right button? And in Massachusetts? Are you there, Anne, or did I screw this up?
I am.
Oh, no, there we go, Anne. I apologize. Hi. How are you?
Sorry. I'm doing well, thank you. So I just want to say, I don't know if it was a happy coincidence, not happy, that's not the right word, but a coincidence or deliberate, but I do believe that the pandemic was a beta test, or ended up being a beta test.
That's right.
To, as the evidence of the soft brain, where the government could force people to do atrocities against their fellow man with the mandate, with institutions wanting people to be to starve their families, be without jobs, be without education, if they did not take the shot, to shut down businesses based on nothing. And I think it ended up being a beta test for the government and the powers that be, that are behind whatever, you know, the sure. Marxists. And so, I think it was a huge success for them.
I was gonna say, how did we do on the test, Anne?
They probably could not have been more delirious with the results. And it, to me, that is the evidence of what that Soviet defector said. That I think it is complete.
Yeah.
I really do. I think what happened in 2021 and 2022 to get what percentage, more than half of people in general, our humanity, to not just want to take the vaccine, but to denounce and want to literally kill those who did not fall into line.
Yeah, like otherwise we thought sensible people saying, not really sensible people in power saying that you should be denied healthcare services if you don't
absolutely.
Get the vax, and you shouldn't be allowed to go to work, and we're going to kick you out of the military, Anne. We're going to kick you out of the hospital. You're not allowed to be a nurse anymore. It's unbelievable.
Right. They were willing to let people not feed their families by denying them employment. That, and you know what else too? And I always go back to this, which I think is so sort of existential. They literally demanded that people did not visit their loved ones at the end of life. The most sacred time of a human's existence, to not be with someone as they're journeying from this life to the next. And we did it. People actually allowed themselves to not be with their mother, their father, their child. I think that is the most abhorrent and existential repugnant act that was done to us, and we let it. And if a human being can let the government tell them that, they'll let them tell them anything, and they'll do it. That's all I have to say.
That's all that need to be said. And well done. COVID was 4 years ago, like right now, 4 years ago. Isn't that amazing? Oh, and that vision. So everything you said is obviously 100% right. Like China, let me say this. On that last point, there's a video I saw. It was a security footage of inside of a funeral home. And there's a funeral taking place. We're in the beginning of COVID. And all the chairs, they're like, there was only like five people in the room, like just immediate family only allowed. And the chairs were 6 feet apart. And there's a point where the grieving widow was in her chair, completely isolated from her family, right? And it looked like maybe her son walked over, kneeled next to the chair, and put his arm over his grieving mother. And the funeral home director came in and pulled them apart, separated them, told him to go back and sit in his chair. Families not allowed to be with each other in their final moments. Saying goodbye over FaceTime. I'm sure people listening now live like this actually happened to them. John, our now 4-year-old, was born right before COVID, and like days before COVID. And the idea, like right after that, like I husband wouldn't have been allowed into the labor and delivery room. Like, we out of you, I will scale the side of the building. What are you kidding me? And just to say how different people are. I remember there are videos of families meeting their elderly loved ones behind plastic wrap and like literally hugging their grandparents who are covered in plastic, like saran wrap. And it would be like played on the Today Show, and the people on the Today Show would be like, oh, how beautiful. Like, oh, horrific, I believe is the word you're looking for. And the Chinese were sitting back saying, I can't believe they fell for that. I had no idea that the Americans were that pathetic. were that weak and pathetic that they fell for that totally hook, line, and sinker. It's unbelievable. How, and but just to what, to human nature, if you had any faith in human nature, I hope it was completely destroyed during COVID. The fact that the government could get people to believe anything, to redefine words, to mock and ridicule anyone who dare question, and to shut down the country. Like that is all you need to know to be max awareness moving forward. Listen to Breitbart News Daily. So Boeing, like, what is going on with our airplanes, and who's to blame for this, and who will be held accountable for this? The very beginning of our conversation about this. There's more to come, surely, with Jay Ratliff. Jay, how are you, sir?
Pleasant. Good morning to you again.
And to you. I don't know where to start this story. Let me just say this. So the other day I saw a video. It was an undercover video of a guy who worked at one of the manufacturing facilities, and he was going around. And he was talking to people, and they were talking about how they're high and they're just doing shoddy work, and they themselves would never fly on a Boeing airplane. And I was like, well, this is crazy. But then it was an Al Jazeera report, so I'm like, I'm not gonna believe that. And it turned out it was from 9 years ago. So like, I don't know what to do with that. But then we got this report that there was a FAA audit of Boeing planes, and it didn't go well for them. What was found in that audit?
Well, they found that some shortcuts were being taken, and that some of the quality control process procedures that they had in place weren't being followed. And there were so many things that were within the report, and it just it screams that there's a whole lot going on here that, A, we've been aware of for a while, and B, that Boeing promised many, many years ago to fix. Now, if you go back to the Boeing MAX crashes that we had about 5 years ago, we had two crashes. I think it was 436 lives that were lost. It was over the introduction of the Boeing MAX aircraft, the MCAS system that they had on board an aircraft. And the investigation revealed that Boeing was aware of the fact that they had serious safety issues on this airplane. They withhold critical information from FAA inspectors, from airlines, and from pilots. In fact, the pilots weren't even told of the MCAS system that was on there that would violently rip the controls out of their hands and maintain control for 10 seconds and then give it back at 5 seconds in the event that the aircraft detected a stall was in place or in danger. So one of the things that Boeing, it was discovered during the investigation over the next couple of years, is they were very negligent. I think almost from a criminal standpoint in my own mind, but they took responsibility. They were fine. Nobody got fired. I don't think anybody from the board of directors at Boeing was let go. You had a culture at Boeing that for a number of years existed that the production of the aircraft, that schedule was king. Safety seemed to be taking a back seat. And after this, Boeing came out with paragraphs of promise saying, we've learned our lesson. This will never happen again. We're going to become the Boeing of old, which used to be the most incredible safety-minded organization on the planet. And they said, we're going to learn from this. We're going to get better. So we fast forward to December of last year on the 30th. Boeing sends out a memo to people that had their Boeing MAX airplane saying, look, some pilots or some mechanics have reported that they found some loose and missing bolts on the rudder control systems of these airplanes. Keep this in mind. Check this as you can. Just kind of an advisory. And it's like, wait a minute, how can there be missing bolts from anything on a Boeing aircraft? Well, then it's, 2 weeks later, the door blows off of the Alaska Airlines flight, 1282, and we're finding out that there was unsecured or missing hardware to secure that door as well, which screams, what's going on at Boeing? And, of course, since then, the discussion has been, what's the production going on at Boeing, and what are they not doing? And, obviously, they've not learned from lessons of old, and the production is still driving everything. One of the whistleblowers that everybody's talking about, John Barnett, was a Boeing employee for 32 years, He's been battling Boeing for a number of years, and he was a quality control manager, not over the 737 MAX, but over the Dreamliner 787. And at the facility he was at, he kept complaining that the oxygen systems on board the airplane wouldn't work. In fact, one out of four, he said, would fail in an emergency. He also said that a lot of times when they ran out of parts, supervisors would tell the employees, go over to the scrap bin, you know, where we throw all the parts that are too bad to use. Pick out the best one and bring it back. We'll use that so that we can keep the production going and not delay the assembly process. So the FAA and the Department of Transportation looked into these claims, found out some of them were true. And sadly, that whistleblower was found dead this week with a self-inflicted gunshot wound. But it really just shows that there's a lot of problems going on at Boeing right now. Mm. And it reminds me of the Challenger disaster. When NASA was so hell-bent on launching 24 yes. shuttle missions in the course of a year, whatever it happened to be, that they were going to put the schedule first, safety second. And we're seeing that exact same thing happen yeah. right now at Boeing.
Okay. Where would you assess the breakdown is? So there's – it could be at the top. It could be in middle management. There could be a breakdown. There could be a breakdown of just – the people they hire to put the plane together are on drugs all the time. And right. So there could be where do you think it is, or all of the above?
Well, it's the frontline employees that are complaining, saying that we're being put under a lot of stress here to get these airplanes out faster than we should because of the fact that the schedule right now, look, Airbus is kicking Boeing's tail big time. Mm. And Airbus is clearly the better product right now.
Wow.
So you've got the frontline employees that are doing what they can, but they're under a lot of pressure, and it comes from the top. Look, but I don't expect Boeing to do what's right here. They've had years to do it, and they've not done it. And when they talk, it's like the Charlie Brown adults. Wonk, wonk, wonk. I don't even listen to them because it's like a political speech. They're wow. just saying words to say words. What I look at is the Federal Aviation Administration. They're the ones that are in charge to make sure that Boeing is doing what they're supposed to be doing. After Boeing lied to the FAA inspectors over the Boeing MAX all those years ago, I thought we would be all over Boeing so much that they wouldn't be able to sneeze without an inspector handing them a Kleenex. So what's taken place, though, is, again, there seems to be this latitude that Boeing is given where they're allowed to do certain things. Years ago, if there was ever a problem on a specific airplane, the FAA would step in and ground that airplane and say, look, we're going to find out what's going on first, and then we're going to allow that airplane back into customer service or into service. When the Boeing MAX 2 crashes were taking place years ago and all the airlines around the world were grounding that airplane, I was screaming on every national show I was on, these airplanes need to be grounded now because we don't know what's going on. And sadly, the FAA refused to ground that airplane. And was it because of pressure from Boeing? Maybe from airlines? I don't know.
It's too big
but
to
the
fail.
Airlines that were flying those airplanes also didn't ground them. It took President Trump to step in. And we were the last people on the planet to ground that airplane. And I tell you what, if there's missing bolts or anything like that from critical components on an airplane, then it needs to be inspected immediately. You can't keep playing with fire like this because we have a sense of complacency right now because we're in the safest era ever of commercial jet travel, and human yeah. nature being what it is, it just causes people to get a little sloppy. And we're seeing it
yes.
far too often right now. And we're on borrowed time. We've got to do something, and we've got to do it fast.
Yeah, you're right. You're right with human nature. I think they're too big to fail, right? We can't ground all the airplanes, Jay. I mean, the economy would come to a ground halt, right? So here's the report.
And we're certainly not doing what we need to be doing now. And it seems to me, and look, this is my opinion. I could really be wrong here. I'm not. It's like Boeing's telling the government what they're going to do instead of the other way around.
Yeah, so of the 80, so the FAA audit, 89 production process audits conducted. Boeing failed 33 of the 89. Failed. That's,
yes.
that's 97 instances of noncompliance. one use of a hotel key card to check a door seal. Another is the use of liquid dish soap as a mechanical lubricant.
Yeah, that was my favorite. It's like, here, let's use this. It's like, because every single thing that the FAA does, and they drive me crazy in a lot of ways, but they have very specific process for everything, and you have the right tool for a specific thing, and it has to be approved in advance, worked out, and the idea that we're improvising along the way, here, let's use this. I mean, it's just, it just shows that certain things are just out of control here. And yeah. it's just
okay. So here's my question for you. How bad does it have to be before you don't fly on a Boeing airplane, or before almost everyone else is like, all right, I'm out of Boeing?
Well, it's going to take a crash. It's going to take a loss of life. And then you're going to watch all the political people pull up hamstring, running to the nearest microphone, screaming on what they're going to do. Yeah. And it's sad, but sadly, that's the history of aviation. You have people complaining about things, and it reminds me of pre 9/11. None of the check bags were screened on domestic flights, and we were scared to death that you'd have 20, 30, 40, 50 terrorists board airplanes around the world, or here in the United States, and blow all these airplanes out of the sky because we weren't screening bags. Yeah. We were on borrowed time then. After the attacks of 9/11, everything changed. Where we were then screening bags, but we've got that same sort of issue now. And exactly. I flew a couple of weeks ago. It was on a Boeing. I don't mind. Now, look, I fly Delta as my primary carrier, so they don't have the Boeing Max airplanes. But I would be a little concerned. I'm not saying I wouldn't fly it, but if I had my options,
Jay, yeah. We got to run. Former Northwest Airlines executive Jay_Ratliff, RATLIFF. Jeff, Jay, appreciate it. Thanks for your insight here. Thanks for listening to Breitbart News Daily. On Monday's show, we're going to talk to Vance Ginn, who was Trump's chief economist in the Office of Management and Budget in the White House. That's cool. We'll talk to him about the budget and Biden's enormous budget. Trump's budget, I think, was $4.2 trillion, which is ridiculous. Biden's is $7.3. So, like, what in the world? And then we're going to talk with Bernie Moreno, who is Trump's endorsed candidate for the Senate in Ohio. That's all coming up on Monday's show. Hope you have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you then. Mike Slater, Breitbart News Daily. Spread the word.